It's 7:43. I'm Glynis Board, and on this West Virginia morning, a youth report on an athlete's perseverance.
Hockey, something about it. I'm like, Mom, I'm going to play again. I'm going to play. They're telling me I can't play. That's kind of giving me fire.
That story and more is coming up, but first we check in with communities cleaning up after flooding this weekend. This is West Virginia Morning. Governor Jim Justice declared a state of emergency Sunday following flash flooding in Fayette County. Residents are cleaning up from the aftermath, which they fear could be contaminated with chemicals and sewage. Caitlin Tan reports.
Roads were damaged and homes flooded in Scarborough, Whipple, Oak Hill, and Minden, according to the governor's office. The Fayette County Swiftwater Rescue Team, along with five city fire departments, conducted rescues for 6 hours Sunday night. Oak Hill Fire Chief Tim Richardson was in command of the rescue operation. He says the area received about 4 inches of rain in less than an hour.
So we did probably a total of approximately 18 rescues, and those were anywhere from a one-month-old and the parents of that child to a 70-year-old.
Richardson says there were no fatalities or serious injuries. The Fayette County Emergency Management is conducting damage assessment this week. Annetta Kaufman's home in Minden was flooded several feet high Sunday night. She says she lost her first home and all her possessions in the 2001 flood.
You work so hard. It's a poor community anyway, but, you work, to try to have things, and then, something like that can be gone within 30 minutes.
Another lifelong resident of Minden, Marie Collins, says her home was flooded up to the stairs of her porch and that the underpinning of the house collapsed. Collins, her three boys, and her sister slept in her car at a higher elevation last night. She says it brought back memories of the 2001 flood, where she also lost all of her possessions to water damage.
A lot of people was trapped again, and I'm scared of water now. I'm just so scared.
Collins says this was a larger flood, but that smaller storms flood her yard at least once a month in the summer. She says one of the biggest fears about the flooding is the contamination. Every time it floods, residents think PCB is flushed out into the streets. PCB is a chemical known for causing cancer, which was introduced to Minden through an abandoned coal mine chemical dump site. Minden and the surrounding area has also been ravaged by sewage contamination, which was assessed by the EPA in 2016. According to the report, this was the result of failing and downright non-existent systems to manage human waste. When water levels rise, like Sunday night, Collins says sewage overflows from the septic tanks.
They said there was raw sewage coming down through here too, and then the PCB oil, and then, because right now in my house, the outside smells really, really oily.
In 2017, a $23 million sewage and water drainage project began in efforts to curtail future contaminated floods. But Collins says many of her neighbors' houses were flooded with at least 2 feet of contaminated water Sunday night. According to the Fayette County Emergency Management, they are not anticipating any more flooding in the coming days. Volunteer groups, including the Oak Hill Center for Hope, are prepared to offer shelter, food, and water for those affected by flooding. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan.
High schools throughout the country and the state have had to reimagine graduation for the class of 2020. Many have already had drive-throughs and drive-by graduations, and others hold out hope to also have some sort of traditional ceremony later this summer. But Liz McCormick reports not everyone is following health guidelines.
For about 18,000 high school seniors in West Virginia, the final semester of their student career was turned upside down because of the coronavirus pandemic.
You got those last couple of months taken away from you. We didn't realize we were never going back.
That's Markayla King, a senior at Oak Hill High School in Fayette County.
We didn't think that we weren't ever going to see each other again, or at least until graduation or so. And that kind of just flew past everybody. We couldn't use those last couple months to spend time and make memories and stuff.
When the governor closed schools for good for the rest of the semester, it quickly became clear. No prom or big senior parties. But what about graduation? Schools across the state are trying to get creative. Some schools asked students and their family members to drive up to a designated location to receive a diploma in cap and gown and snap a picture or two. Ripley High School in Jackson County held a parade for its 2020 graduates, announcing their names and future plans on a loudspeaker on the main drag downtown. And King's High School, like some others in West Virginia, had a drive-through graduation. School officials personally delivered all diplomas to everyone's house, and the school plans to have a traditional graduation ceremony outside later this summer.
They're going to have us like seated 6 feet apart, so, and they're going to broadcast it live and stuff too, so like parents and stuff can hear it and see it.
At the end of March, the West Virginia Department of Education created a graduation task force to survey all 55 county school boards and figure out what a 2020 graduation in a pandemic could look like. Jan Barth is the Assistant State Schools Superintendent of Teaching and Learning.
Our goal with the task force was to really pay attention to what people wanted to do with their senior graduations, and we were trying to figure out ways to make sure that they had a face-to-face graduation if the pandemic would allow for that.
Barth, who's also a member of the task force, says the consensus from the beginning was to hope and plan for something traditional later in the summer. And she says the majority of high schools in West Virginia are doing that.
I think a lot of people got good ideas about how to do it as traditionally as they possibly can within the guidelines of the CDC requirements and the governor's guidelines.
Those guidelines include social distancing, wearing masks and gloves, and having hand sanitizer available. But these guidelines aren't mandatory. And Barth says how the graduations were shaped was ultimately decided on by the local county school boards and school districts. During some of the recent drive-through graduations, though, not every school followed these guidelines to the letter. Take Martinsburg High School in Berkeley County. During its drive-through graduation, many students teared up or cheered as they got out of their vehicles. Family members looked on from their cars, taking photos and honking horns. Teachers stood together up the street, waving the school colors and hitting cowbells.
Basically, we wanted to celebrate the students on the day they would have graduated.
That's Martinsburg High School principal Trent Sherman. But something was missing from almost all of the staff members: protective gear to fight the coronavirus, including the principal, who shook hands with nearly every student while not wearing gloves or a mask. Before the event, Principal Sherman said he didn't have any health concerns for the evening because the area was open and outside.
We got open air, so, you know, it's nice out here, a little bit warm, but I think we'll be good.
And Martinsburg High School wasn't alone in these lax practices. Jan Barth says she was aware that some schools weren't following guidelines strictly. She says her team provided all manner of guidelines for schools to follow, but at the end of the day, they're only guidelines.
This is not state code. It's not state policy. It's a local school district decision, and they have all the information they need. They had the social guidance information that they needed from the governor's office.
Since early May, Governor Jim Justice has been slowly reopening West Virginia's economy. And while the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources says we remain below the case rate that would require the state to start closing again, there are still new cases of COVID-19 being discovered every day across the state. In Berkeley County, where Martinsburg High is located, coronavirus testing has recently become more available to the public, and the number of positive cases has grown from roughly 25 per week to between 40 and 50 new cases each week. That's according to Dr. Terrence Reedy, health officer for the Berkeley Morgan County Health Department and the Jefferson County Health Department. Berkeley County has also seen the highest number of positive coronavirus cases in the state.
There's a lot of misinformation out there, either that masks aren't important or I don't have to worry about it, you know, or that this is not a real virus and it's not really deadly, and that's just not true.
Reedy spoke with West Virginia Public Broadcasting via Skype. He cautioned that as things continue to reopen, the way we interact with one another must change to limit the spread of the virus. Reedy acknowledges that social change is hard, but he says if people don't make the effort to take precautions, things will only get worse, especially in the Eastern Panhandle.
To me, this is still the first wave coming in from Baltimore and Washington. It's not so much as the wave as the tide coming in. we know that every week or so there are going to be more and more cases. And it may change a little bit, but with time it's going to increase.
As some high schools in West Virginia begin moving forward with traditional graduations next week, state officials are urging staff and students to be conscientious of others, to follow social distancing guidelines, and to wear a mask when inside a public space or when in close proximity to others. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Martinsburg.
As part of a youth storytelling series from Ohio County Public Schools, students learning about various professions and themes in the region recently interviewed a professional hockey player. From lessons learned on and off the ice, student Bree Wiley collaborated with West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Corey Nollinger to bring us this story of perseverance.
It's a hockey night in Nail City. Tonight, the WestBanco Arena is filled with fans waiting to see their minor league hockey team and Pittsburgh Penguins affiliate, the Wheeling Nailers, play against another team in the ECHL.
One of the names fans can expect on the ice tonight is defenseman Aaron Titcomb.
Playing ECHL hockey was a huge step toward a larger goal of playing for the NHL, but Titcomb says his goals are multifaceted and shifting.
At first, my goal was to make it to the NHL, and if that happens, that would be great. But now I think being able to affect as many people's lives as I can while I have this platform is my biggest goal, because when I tend to wear this jersey, people tend to listen to somebody who has this platform. So I want to take full advantage of that and show them that, hey, no matter where you came from or what your upbringing is, you can still affect a lot of people if you just put your mind to it and do it.
This is a lesson Titcomb learned from his own rough upbringing.
My father was murdered when I was one. He was shot. He got into drugs at a young age, and it kind of took hold of him. So just kind of had a bad life. And my mother had to take the reins at the age of 17. So a single mother growing up in the city of Boston is kind of tough. So I kind of had a rough start, but my family came together. My mother really did a great job.
Growing up, Titcomb tried to play other sports, particularly baseball and football, but neither called out to him like hockey.
When he was 17, Titcomb's hockey career seemed to be on the rise. He had just verbally committed to his dream school, the University of Boston. It was the first year he was eligible for the NHL draft, but one moment changed his entire path going forward.
So I broke my neck when I was 17. I got hit from behind, snapped my C3 and C4, was deemed a quadriplegic, went into the hospital. I slowly started to get my feeling back. I was in a neck brace for 9 months. That's when baseball offers started to come in, and my mother's like, why don't you take the baseball offer? I'm like, no, hockey, something about it. I'm like, Mom, I'm going to play again. I'm going to play. They're telling me I can't play. That's kind of giving me fire.
The next 9 months were an uphill struggle for Titcomb, to say the least. Doctors thought he would have a hard time walking again, let alone skating. Even after skating, playing hockey wouldn't be easy.
Finally, after 9 months, Titcomb was to go on the ice again. He still remembers his first game back.
I remember it clear as day, because you got to think there's a lot of frustration that goes into that. Like, I couldn't even walk up a flight of steps without passing out because the concussion was very bad. I couldn't read a book without blacking out. In the first game, the doctor kind of says, like, okay, look, you're going to go and just kind of go through the paces. Don't really hit anybody. And I didn't listen.
Titcomb remembers getting at least 6 penalties that game.
I had a lot of built-up aggression. I actually ended up getting kicked out of the game.
Titcomb isn't at all apologetic about his aggression. He says there's a time and a place to blow off steam, and defending goals is one of them, especially hockey goals.
I think I just kind of built up a frustration towards the world and just a, you know, kind of like a why me attitude, and just I think that got the best of me. And you know what? I don't feel bad for it, because I think anybody put in that situation, it would take a very special person to kind of just let it fly, especially with the life that I had before.
After high school, Titcomb ended up at Merrimack College, where he majored in sports management. It was there he made a connection with Merrimack coach Mark Dennehy, who had a very short stint as head coach of the Wheeling Nailers. During that time, he decided to sign Titcomb, who has since remained with the team. While Titcomb has lived a life of pain and persistence, he attributes his current success to one thing, his grades.
I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't be where I am without my grades, because my grades got me a college education. My grades are what's really gotten me here. So, I mean, hockey's just a luxury I have of playing. So without the grades, I wouldn't be able to do this.
Tickholm's story resonated with students, many of whom have had their own personal battles to deal with. Bree Wiley, an eighth grader at Tridelphia Middle School, was among the students inspired by the perseverance Tickholm has been able to show in the face of adversity.
He had so much that, so many obstacles in his path, like his father and stuff like that. And I just think it's really amazing how he can still stay so strong.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Corey Nollinger in Wheeling.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Bree Wiley in Wheeling.
That story is part of a youth storytelling initiative made possible through the Rural Arts Collaborative. It was recorded and produced out of a yurt in an outdoor classroom in the middle of an urban farm in downtown Wheeling. And if you didn't catch all that, learn more at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support from our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. And on this West Virginia Morning, I'm your host, Glynis Borg.